Nasser and Mikey are still with me. How did you feel speaking down the barrel of a camera about this subject?
Well, I obviously didn't get as emotional as Ebony because, as I said in that video, I didn't really experience a great deal of that as a young man growing up in Jamaica, perhaps because I wasn't in that society or mixing with people that would have shown me that racism. But what I want to expand on, though, Wardy, is what I said about education. Education is important unless we just want to continue living the life that we are living and continue just having demonstrations every now and again and a few people saying a few things. And when I say education, I mean going back in history. What people need to understand is that this thing stems from a long time ago, hundreds of years ago. The dehumanization of the black race is where it started. And people will tell you, oh, that's a long time ago, get over it. No, you don't get over things like that. And the society has not gotten over something like that. I'll skip all the gap between those long years ago and make one point and then go back, Wardy. That lady in the Central Park in New York, Amy Cooper, I think is her name. If she did not have in her DNA the thought process that she was white, this man is black, if I call a police officer, 9 times out of 10 he's going to be white, I'm going to be considered right immediately. The black guy will have to prove that he's not guilty, and by the time he proves that he's not guilty, he might be dead. She had that in her mind from day one. That is why she said and did what she did. How do you get rid of that in the society? By educating both sides, black and white. I hear people talking about brainwashing. I didn't quite understand as a young man what brainwashing meant. I now understand what brainwashing meant, what it means. We have been brainwashed, and not just black people. White people have been brainwashed in different ways. I go back many years. Think about religion. You and I are supposed to be Christians. I'm not really a very holy person, not a very religious person, but that's what we were taught. Look at Jesus Christ, the image that they give you of Jesus Christ. Pale skin, blonde hair, blue eyes. Where Jesus came from, who in that part of the world looks that way? But again, that's the brainwashing to show you this is what perfection is. This is what the image of perfection is. If you look at any plays of those days, Judas, who betrayed Jesus, he's a black man. Again, brainwashing people into thinking, oh, he's a black man. He's the bad man. Go through history, Wardy. These lights that are shining on us. You can tell me who invented the light bulb, right? Thomas Edison, right? Everybody knows Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. Thomas Edison invented a light bulb with a paper filament. It burnt out in no time at all. Can you tell me who invented the filament that makes these lights shine throughout? Nobody knows, because he's a black man. It was not taught in schools. Lewis Howard Latimer invented the carbon filament to allow lights to continuously shine. Who knows that? Everything should be taught. When you go back through the schooling as a young man, I remember my school days. I was never taught anything good about black people. And you cannot have a society that is brought up like that, both white and black, that only teach what's convenient to the teacher. History is written by the conqueror, not by those that are conquered. History is written by the people who do the harm, not by the people who get harmed. And we need to go back and teach both sides of history. And until we do that and educate the entire human race, this thing will not stop. They keep on telling me there's nothing called white privilege. Give me a break. I don't see any white people going into a store on Oxford Street and being followed. A black man walks in, somebody's following him everywhere he goes. That is basic white privilege. Whether that white person went in to rob the place or not, he's not going to be thought of that way. And things like that have to change.
We'll leave you there. Come back to you just a sec. Have you experienced racism in your time as a cricketer or otherwise?
It would be stupid for me to say yes after what we've just heard and after that very strong piece. Of course I have, with my surname growing up in South Essex, East London, with an Indian dad and a English mum, probably getting it a little bit from both sides, you know, fielding on a boundary in various parts of the world and people saying, oi, Saddam, why don't you off back to wherever you came from? That's small stuff compared to what Mikey and Ebony, that was a very strong piece. The raw emotion of Ebony there, what she's been through, and the cool, calm dissection of racism from Michael Holding was absolutely magnificent. And people will be tuning in and going, not this again.
Yep.
Didn't we do this with the football? Haven't we done it with the Grand Prix? This is cricket. This is our game. We played with and against black cricketers. We commentate and work with black commentators that played the game and gave so much to the game. The history, I'm not talking cricketing history, between these two nations, the proper history that he talks about, makes this a much more poignant series to wear these badges. And all I'll say to those people who say, not again, I sat there 6 weeks ago, put Channel 4 News on, and watched a black man being killed in front of my eyes. And my natural reaction, as you should, was to look away. I can't watch this. I look away. This is someone's dad, someone's brother, someone's partner, someone's son being killed in front of your eyes here. And the next time it came on, because of the protests, I forced myself to watch because I felt something inside me say, Nas, you've been looking away too long. We've all been looking away too long. The players should be proud of wearing these badges. We should be proud of wearing these badges. But really, 2020, we have to wear a badge saying Black Lives Matter? Really? That should be a given, Wardy. That's my opinion.
And what's one other point on that, Wardy? I don't want people to think that I think all white people walk around are racist and think racist things. I want to tell you about a study that they did at the Yale University. Anybody can go and Google it. Other search engines are available, of course, and find the study that was done at Yale University in 2016, not 1916, 2016. They got 130 preschool teachers. They go into a room and watch a video, and they told the 130 preschool teachers, look out for bad behavior. There were black boys, black girls, white girls. At the end of the video, there was no bad behavior in the video, but they told them look out for bad behavior. At the end of the video, they had some technology tracking the eyes of the teachers looking at the room. At the end of the video, they gave the 130 teachers the results. You know where their eyes constantly looked? At the black kids. Black boys majority, then the white boys, then black girls, then the white girls. That is their eye tracking revealed that. When they revealed the results to the 130 teachers, 129 of them were embarrassed. So that shows you that they were not thinking, I am racist, I'm looking at black. They did not even know. They were unconscious. One person said they did not want the results released. So you know why that person did not want the results released? The 129 said, no, release the results. This is embarrassing, and people outside must know what's happening. So we're not telling people that they're outwardly racist. It's not something that everybody walks around and think, whether I'm black, I don't like white people, or whether I'm black, white, I don't like black people. But it's a society in which we grow. It's almost like osmosis. It seeps into you, and subconsciously, it affects your mind.
We're going to bring in Ebony now, who obviously was a big feature in that piece, spoke very emotionally, and Mikey's speaking emotionally now. Are you in any way, because you've been on a couple of the marches in London, have you been in any way remotely encouraged by the discussions that are being taken place, and as Mikey's just been speaking so passionately, and the diversity of some of the crowds that were on the protests at all?
Yeah, I have to say I am. You know, I would say actually my thought of possibility has opened up. The amount of conversations, the amount of airtime, you know, would we have given this sort of subject this airtime before? I think even relating it to our game and the ECB and hearing the statements they're making, I know we need to look forward to action, but I definitely feel, one, everyone's starting to get it now, even if it's not the masses as such. I think the majority are starting to come on board. But what I feel where we are now is, look, it's a very emotional subject, as you can hear. I think it's time to get focused. I want to see accelerated change in all areas of society, but I think specifically we need to focus on our game. I kind of want to talk about two things, really. One, where we are now, and let's be brutally honest about that. But two, I actually think there's an exciting possibility if we all come together, which we're starting to do and collectively talk about it. So I just want to drill into our game a little bit, because a lot of people here watching saying, is there a problem in cricket? And many might see Jofra Archer at the helm and think it's fine. Let's kind of look at, does cricket value the black community? I start with positions of power, and you go down the list. Black ECB board members, black chief executives in our game, directors of cricket, black head coaches, black captains. The number is zero in all those columns at the moment. So that doesn't sort of shed light for our environment in terms of positivity there. In terms of the professional game, we've seen a decline in 75% in the men's game of black players, and many who actually did play came through and learned their trade in the West Indies. So when we actually start to look at how many black players have come through our system, it's very low. And you compare that to sports like football and athletics, you know, the numbers are actually rising and going in the opposite direction. Even rugby, to an extent, which is most comparable as an elitist sport to ours, we're seeing movement in a positive direction. And then at the grassroots, we're only 1%. And if you really start to dig into some of those numbers, although, you know, the national average is around 4%, but actually, if you look at areas like ours, so us at Surrey at the Oval, our borough, Lambeth, is 42% people from a black background. So that's where I actually grew up. So we're talking about 33,000 young kids walking past our doors, our gates, every single day, and there's zero transition into our pathway. So we have to admit there's a bit of a problem. The women's game as well, zero black players and actually zero diversity. The last player to play 11 years after me, Sophia Dunkley, but the current team is all white. So anybody who says there isn't an issue, we really need to be honest. And I think we're having these conversations. But I do want to throw forward, because, Wardy, I feel that, you know, it's worth taking time to say there is excitement. We launched an ACE program recently at Surrey. We didn't know if there's any talent kids out there. Is the community interested? The engagement was ridiculous. We found talent that's not been on our system that has a potential to be part of the next generation of players coming through. We saw excitement from the community. We found cricket clubs that are not getting supported, but we invest in them. There could be a change. So what I would say is, we're at a stage, if we accelerate change, if we come together, if the ECB links up its plans with all the influencers, gets people into the right positions, has the right conversation, we could change the landscape in 3 to 5 years. I'm very confident of that from what we've seen. But what it takes is honest conversations and real action.
Are you encouraged by some of the conversations that are being had now? And again, the diversity of people on the marches in London and around the country?
Yeah, I'm encouraged by what I see with people marching and the diversity, as I said, of the people marching. But what encourages me more is to see big companies, corporations getting on board, not just sitting back and waiting for things to just die down and to continue as they are. The company we work with here, Sky, they have invested or intend to invest £30 million. That's a lot of money to do towards the BLM movement to make sure that they can try and make a difference. I see companies all over the US doing the same thing. And that is what I would want to see, Wardy. People are talking about cricket and football and Formula One and golf and all that sort of thing. Yes, sport and sportsmen, they have a platform. They should use their voices. But we have seen that in the past. We have seen that in the past where people have said things and people have tried campaigns. And it has frittered away and nothing has changed. We need to go back into the society and reteach, re-educate people. Because a lot of black people are growing up in this world believing that they are lesser than other people. And that cannot be right. I'll give you another thing about that study. There was another study in 2014 at the same Yale University with police officers, because that's a big problem again. Police officers were shown pictures of black kids and white kids, kids meaning early teens, and asked to guess their age. And anybody wants to doubt this, they can look them up. I'm not going to call in the search engines, but you can find them. Each police officer was asked at the end how old he thought the black kids that he saw were and how old he thought the white kids were. On average, the police officers gave the black kids' age 4.5 years older than they were. The white kids, no problem. They guess their age easily. Now, if you are a police officer and you're confronting a 14-year-old and you think in your mind he's 18, 19 years old, your attitude is going to be different towards that kid That kid is no longer an innocent little 14-year-old. He's an 18, 19-year-old senior approaching adulthood. So your approach is going to be different. So that is something that has to be tackled as well, because we know that there has been abuse of black people by police officers, not just here in England or in the US, all over the place. So that is an issue that has to be tackled as well. We have to tackle this thing from the society. It's a society who come and play sport. It's a society who come and stand and sit in the stands, who cheer. Unless the society itself is cleansed and sorted, we will continue to have this problem.
Delayed play, Michael Holding instead delivered a powerful and moving speech on race. The Sky Sports pundit and legendary West Indian fast bowler fought back tears as he called for an end to institutional racism and for meaningful education on black history. Michael Holding joins me now from Southampton. Good evening, Michael. Thank you for being with us. Now, you've done a lot of commentary, but that right there was possibly the most powerful thing that you have said. What impact do you hope it has?
Well, Mark, thanks for having me. Thanks for giving me the opportunity again to talk to the entire public and the world about this thing. I would hope, Mark, that it's not just something that people have heard and they will just brush it under the carpet and eventually just move on. I would hope that people will understand exactly what I'm saying and that understand exactly where I'm coming from with what I'm saying. I'm 66 years old. I'm no kid. I have been through it, I've seen it, and I've experienced it with other people. And as I said, as a young man, I was very selfish. I just said to myself, that's not affecting me. I'll just walk away, no big thing. But when you realize it's affecting so many different people over the world, and then when you realize, you see with your own eyes the victimization, you just can't keep on just saying you're going to walk away and forget it because it doesn't affect you. And that is why I had to say what I said. It was not planned. It was because it rained. Obviously, the video was planned. The video was recorded about a week or so before we came to Southampton. But I had it all pent up inside of me, and I just had to say it.
Yeah, I mean, it was unscripted, obviously, and from the heart. But your appeal was about education, for history when taught to include the white perspective and the black perspective.
Definitely, Mark. You see, if you go back many years, many centuries, the entire world and society was built on white people. White people did everything. And whatever you're taught in school, I spent about 9 years at high school. I wasn't that bright, so I spent a lot of time at high school. But I was never taught anything about anything that a black person did that was good. And when you grow up and that is inculcated in you, that everything good is done by the white man or anything bad is done by a black man, it cannot be good for your health. Mental health I'm talking about. You have kids growing up that they think they have absolutely no chance of achieving what other kids their same age but just with a different skin color has achieved. And that can't be good. I can give you many stories and examples. I gave some when I was speaking yesterday about the different studies that were done at Yale University. This is not just some little university in some backwoods. Yale University did these studies and they discovered the institutionalized racism that is going on. It cannot continue like this. We have to understand that people are people. Okay, you want to write a book about the history of your people? What about explaining everything about that history? Everything, not just what is suitable to be explained.
Yeah, and your own personal experience since you've been playing cricket, have you experienced racism on the cricket field?
Not by cricketers. I've never had one cricketer anywhere in the world that has passed a racist remark to me. Never, ever. But of course, I spend most of my time though at fine leg and third man. And you know what people in the stands will say. So you hear it. But never, ever has a cricketer passed a racist remark to me because I wouldn't have stood for it anyway.
But what about wider society? What about just your normal life on the streets of the UK?
Lots, Mark, lots. You know, I can tell you about so many things that have happened to me here in the UK and even in Australia where I've been, in South Africa since I started going down there, lots of things. I'll give you an example of each place. Here in the UK, I was with the lady that is now my wife, who is Portuguese background, that means that she's white, and I was standing beside her in Leicester Square, waiting on a taxi. We had just gone to Chinatown to get a meal, came back out, trying to get a taxi. The taxi was heading in our direction with its lights on. I stepped out to put my hand in the road for the taxi driver to stop. He turned off the light. That's not only me. I saw it happen to friends of mine years ago. He turned off the light, and when he passed me, he turned it back on. And a West Indian, a West Indian background, across the street, saw me, shouted to me, recognized me, and said, "Mikey, you have to put her in front," which is meaning put the white lady in front, because the guy will stop for the white lady. And I shouted back to him, "I'll walk first." Yeah. That is this country. Australia, West Indies team were down there in the 80s. A group of us were in the lift, because whenever we go to Australia and we stay in a hotel, they put the entire team on the same floor. So about four or five of us got into the lift to go down into the lobby. It stopped on the floor below ours. The doors opened, and a white Australian guy stood there, saw us in the lift, and decided he was not going to come into the lift. Okay, if you feel intimidated by four big black guys, fine. The lift door starts to close, and he shouts a racist remark just as the door is closing. So we just laugh, we go down into the lobby, we go our way. That's Australia.
Yeah.
Down to South Africa now. The first time I went to South Africa, I went with Sky. I went there on my own. The second time I went to World Cup, again, with my wife, same white lady, our skin white, Portuguese background. We stood at the lobby trying to book in. A guy came to me, tried to book me in, and somebody walked up to her immediately to try to book her in, because in their mind, she could not be with me. And that is the sort of thing, but we laugh about those things, because society, I just laugh about it. Sometimes I grimace in my head and I move on.
So,
but I cannot keep on laughing, grimacing and moving on. It's time for change.
So my question, I think, is, after what's happened to George Floyd and all that has followed that, Michael, do you think the time is right now? Could this be the moment where things can and possibly do change?
I think it can. I think it definitely is the moment. I've seen so many positive things since that George Floyd situation, Mark. I made a comment about the amount of white people that I see are in these protest marches. Some protest marches have more whites than blacks. I think that's a huge plus for this movement. One thing that a friend of mine even sent me on WhatsApp today, there's a gentleman in the United States, a bloodstock agent, who posted some racist remarks on his private whatever, Facebook. I don't know what to do. I'm not a big guy on social media. But it became public. Keeneland Racing Industry banned him immediately. Neither he nor the company he represents, the horses he's trying to sell or buy, can go to Keeneland this year. Shortly after that, his son posted on, again, some social media that it's his father. He's ashamed of what his father did, but in a way, he's glad, because for the last 20 years, he has been trying to have this conversation with his father about his racist remarks. Yeah. And he says he's so glad to a degree that it happened, so he can now actually sit down with his father and say, "Listen, this is what you have been doing. This cannot be right." This is his own son. And he came out with a post criticizing his father and said he's glad he can now sit down with him and discuss it.
Yeah.
I see the possibility of change. And this is not just a few people talking, a few people marching for a week, day or two. I think with even companies, Mark, the company that we are working for now, they have pledged £30 million towards this campaign. And I see a lot of other companies doing that. And that is the most important thing.
Right.
Little people on the street walking up and down and not going in a particular shop. That is important, yes, but you need big corporations to back this thing.
All right, just two more questions. Going on from what you say,
sure.
It's going to take an enormous effort from everybody, talking about having people in decision, black people in decision-making positions in sport, in business, in politics. This is going to take a long time, and it may just be that, everything goes back to normal.
I would hope it won't go back to normal. I'll hope that train will just keep on moving. And yes, I know it's going to take a long time. I am 66 years old. I may not see it myself. What I'm hoping for is future generations, that they will all have equality. My grandson, for instance, he's 6 years old. I hope that when he gets to be a man, that there will be nothing about black and white and brown and pink. It will just be human beings, that everybody gets an equal opportunity depending on their skills, not the color of their skin or their race or their ethnicity or what their religion. That is what I'm hoping for. That's a big hope. But I'm hoping that we are moving in the right direction and eventually we'll get there. This thing has been going on for decades, for centuries, Mark. So I don't expect overnight change. But it has to start somewhere, and hopefully it will just keep on rolling a bit at a time, a bit at a time. You cannot change what is in people's heads overnight. As I said yesterday, a lot of it is not people thinking negatively. It is something that is just seeps in almost like osmosis into your mindset. That study that I related to with the preschools teachers who automatically look for the black kids to be misbehaving, they were embarrassed when they were told that's what they did, because it is not conscious. It is not something that they consciously think about. But when you live in a society and you live in that environment, you automatically get it into your head. The son of that bloodstock agent, he said that that is what his father taught him.
Yeah.
That is not something that he was born with. Nobody is born with it. But if you don't have the people to teach it, and eventually it will just die away. As I said, I will be around to see it, but I'm hoping for future generations.
Well, look, one last thing, Michael. At the end of your impromptu speech, yesterday, you seemed visibly upset. How difficult was it emotionally? I mean, in the middle of a rain delay, at a cricket match, on live television.
To be honest, that emotional part came when I started thinking of my parents. And it's coming again now. Mark, I know what my parents went through.
All right, take your time, Michael. Take your time.
My mother's family stopped talking to her because her husband was too dark. I know what they went through, and that came back to me immediately.
All right, Michael. Well, look, extraordinary stuff yesterday, and thank you very much for being with us today. And as you say, it may be the moment that things change, and you obviously hope so.
Well, it's going to be a slow process, Mark, but I hope, even if it's a baby step at a time, even snail's pace, but I'm hoping it will continue in the right direction. Even snail's pace, I don't care.
Okay, Michael, look, I appreciate you joining us, and a difficult subject, but something you wanted to talk about. Thank you very much for being with us, Michael.
My pleasure.